and vision statement for KBOO and to share your valuable knowledge about your community radio station. If you would like to attend the retreat on May the 30th, get in touch with Monica Beamer and RSVP by sending her an email at monica@kboo.org or calling 503-231-8032, extension 201. More details about the agenda for the retreat will be sent to you when you RSVP. We hope to see you on May the 30th, and thank you for being an active member of KBOO.
This KBOO program has been made possible in part by KBOO Foundation members and a grant from Laurelhurst Theater and Pub, independently owned and operated, featuring modern, independent, and classic films, microbrews, pizzas, salads, and wraps, located at East Burnside and 28th in Portland. 503-232-5511 or laurelhursttheater.com.
Hello, and welcome to the film show on KBOO. I'm SW Conser, and I'll be joined in just a few minutes by my co-host, Jen Chavez. Jen will be talking this morning with Ariella Migdal of the American Civil Liberties Union. The ACLU's Film Equality Campaign is currently investigating gender discrimination in film and TV hiring practices. They're asserting that Hollywood doesn't get a free pass to violate civil rights laws. And I'll be joined by artists Craig Winslow and Michael Ackerman. And next week, Craig and Mike are setting out on a road trip from Portland, Maine to Portland, Oregon. And wherever they stop for the night, they'll be setting up projection-mapped video screenings, all based on the day's travels. But first, we're going to talk about psychoactive mushrooms. And joining us on the line is filmmaker Oliver Quintanilla. Oliver will be coming to town next month. He'll be at the Clinton Street Theater to host a screening of his documentary, Little Saints. Oliver, welcome to the film show.
Thank you. Thank you for having me.
So tell us about your film, Little Saints. It follows a journey that you took to the Mazatec region of Mexico, where psilocybin mushrooms are very well established in the history, in the culture, even the local religious tradition.
Yes. I've been visiting the area since 1999, and I met with a shaman. Her name is Natalia. And since the very first time I met her, I asked her that I wanted to make a documentary about her practice, and they're very reclusive in that way. They don't want a camera during the ceremonies or anything. So it took 5 years of gaining her trust until she allowed me to actually film, and I came back with a small crew and a few people that wanted to participate in the ceremonies and find healing that way, and that's what we made a movie about.
So, Becca, 5 years before you made the film, you first ran into the shaman, Natalia, and she really inspired you. She had the work that she did with these traditional medicines had a huge effect on your life.
Yes. I mean, at the time, even though I grew up in Mexico Catholic, at some point in my life, I decided to become an atheist. So through the experiences with her, I sort of gained back my faith and sort of encountered myself in a different way that I never thought possible. And just also meeting her, it's very obvious that she has knowledge about the spirit world that few other people have. So that was very intriguing, and that really caught my attention. And I think a lot of people can benefit from this type of ceremonies, you know, if they're open to it, of course.
So you brought down a small crew and then some of your friends. And so all of these folks who came down with you, they became immersed in this ritual. And is there also in the movie some of the background about the Mazatec tradition and how this medicine that had been part of a very small culture became, you know, such a powerful sort of touchstone for so many other cultures, including our own?
Yes, I did interview a few people that have a lot of knowledge on the subject, local people. There's the Catholic priest from Walter Jimenez. He gave us an amazing interview and compared the mushrooms and how they can interact with Catholicism and mix within the Catholic beliefs. I also interviewed people from the Indigenous Institute in Mexico, some scientists, anthropologists, doctors, Charles Grove from UCLA, Dr. Stanislav Grove, Jeremy Narby, Richard Sander, a few doctors that have experience with psychedelics and that are very well established within the psychedelic literature.
Well, sounds really all-encompassing. You're bringing this feature documentary to the Clinton Street Theater in Portland on the 18th of June. You'll be there in person. You'll be able to answer some questions from the audience.
Yes, I'm going to introduce the film. I give a short keynote talk. I show a few slides and pictures from my travels. I talk about my experiences with Mazatec shamanism. And then we play the movie, and at the end there's questions and answers and a nice conversation with the people in attendance.
Well, that'll be great. We'll look forward to seeing you on the 18th of June. Oliver Quintanilla, thank you for joining us on the film show and talking about Little Saints, your new documentary.
Thank you. Thanks for having me.
You're listening to the film show on KBOO, and coming right up is Jen Chavez. She's going to be talking with Ariella Migdal of the ACLU about their film equality campaign.
Ah, the boys' club. Not a new concept to us female-identified folks, especially those of us who happen to be directors working in Hollywood. Statistics and anecdotal evidence over many years show that women film and television directors are vastly underrepresented in the industry, in many cases revealing blatant gender discrimination in hiring for big projects or shows. Well, the American Civil Liberties Union doesn't think women in Hollywood should have to tolerate long-standing gender bias any longer. That's the focus of their recently launched Film Equality Campaign, which you can check out at aclusocal.org/filmequality. The Southern California and National ACLU offices teamed up to request state and federal investigations into discriminatory hiring practices by Hollywood employers, whom they say, quote, don't get a free pass to violate civil rights laws. I spoke this week with Ariella Migdal, a senior staff attorney with the ACLU's Women's Rights Project, for more details on their efforts. So recently, the ACLU of Southern California, who you've partnered with on the film equality campaign, sent letters to civil rights agencies on the state and federal level. Who did you contact, and what specifically have you asked them to do?
We reached out to three civil rights agencies, two federal agencies, the Equal Employment Opportunity Commission, which is the agency that enforces the federal non-discrimination laws, as well as another part of the Department of Labor that regulates federal contractors, which many in the entertainment industry are. And we also reached out to the California State Department of Fair Employment and Housing, which enforces California's fair employment laws. And we asked all of them to initiate investigations into discrimination against women directors in episodic television and in film, where we saw stark gender disparities, discrimination, and barriers against women trying to direct.
Yeah, you have provided statistical evidence as part of these letters of gender disparities in hiring practices for film and television director roles. Can you share some of the evidence you find most strongly makes the case that this gender discrimination is happening?
Absolutely. And I should say that our statistics were by and large taken from a couple of sources. There are some scholars at USC Annenberg and at San Diego State, as well as the director's own internal guild that measures who gets to direct how many episodes. And so we just basically compiled and put together studies. Sundance and Women in Film also track some of this. And they really have some alarming statistics. fewer than 2% of the directors of the top grossing 100 films in the last couple of years were women. And then in television, when you analyze the numbers, there women were only about 14% of the directors in the 2013-14 season. And a scary number of shows have no women directing even a single episode. So the numbers we looked at showed 70 TV shows, that's 31% of the shows they were looking at, had zero women directing any episodes. And if you think about a season being about 26 episodes of TV, some of these shows have been on the air for several years and have actually no women. That's what suggests that there might be discrimination afoot.
You know, personally, I think the thing about this issue is that I feel like everyone has kind of known this to be true anecdotally for a while, this idea of Hollywood as this boys club. When I saw this story, the gender gap wasn't news to me. It was more notable to see that someone was speaking up about it in a serious way. You collected anecdotal comments, in fact, from women working in media about their experiences. What are some maybe egregious things that you heard from women filmmakers?
Your point is absolutely correct. Women in Hollywood and in the industry have been identifying this discrimination for many years. And every year these reports come out, and we're not the first ones to kind of look at these statistics. I think what we've added is pointing out that these look a lot like violations of our civil rights laws. We called for women, after we had been contacted by some women directors, we called for women directors to reach out to us confidentially to let us know what barriers they were facing. And the response was surprising. We have heard from more than 50 women directors in the industry, many of them saying the same things over and over again, even though they don't know each other. So, for example, they get told that as a director, they can only direct girl type shows or commercials for girls' products. They'll be told that a particular show doesn't hire women, or that a particular hiring producer does not want to hire women or is not women friendly. And then they also will have unconscious bias leveled at them. So they might be told, you don't have enough experience with special effects, or we need someone who can do action. And they'll be told that even when they are women who have directed action and special effects. So there's a range of barriers. And in our letters to these three civil rights agencies, we tried to really lay those out, including quoting women, both the women who talked to us anonymously and some women who have written about this publicly in blogs and other forums.
You know, one argument that you make is that this can't be attributed to a lack of qualified or interested job candidates. And I wonder if you can say how your research supports this.
First of all, that is something that women and others hear in the industry all the time. You know, we'd love to hire a woman, but we just don't know any women who can really handle a film of this budget. Or I don't know women who can do TV and get it done on time. This is a very hard show to direct, and so on. So you hear that all the time, or they'll say, women can't handle my crew, all kinds of versions of that. But what's interesting is, how do you measure whether there are women directors? One way is to look at the film schools. So the people who run these film schools have actually spoken out in the newspaper and other places and said, actually, we're graduating men and women at roughly equal rates. We don't have hard numbers about both how many women graduate film schools, but also who in film school is majoring in directing. But the estimates range anywhere from a third women to half women. So there's not a lack of women film students. But then if you go into women in their careers, Sundance did an interesting study showing that women participate roughly equally in Sundance. And we heard this anecdotally as well. We heard many women saying, my film was in a film festival and it won an award. And the guys who were in my Sundance class, they were then offered studio opportunities to direct big budget films. And I didn't get any meetings. And so even when women make films and they do well and their films are awarded prizes, that is sometimes the end for them, and you'll find them three films later still scraping together their own budgets for small independent films while their male peers have gone on to direct huge Hollywood blockbusters at $100 million budgets.
Wow. So back to your request, I'm wondering if this type of request or the type of investigation you are requesting has precedent. Has any sort of investigation similar to this been done before?
Not exactly like this, but at the ACLU and in other civil rights nonprofits, we regularly work with these civil rights government agencies. And so we have in the past called upon, for example, the federal EEOC and the Labor Department's contractor division. We've called upon them to prioritize certain issues. Most recently, we've worked with them a lot on the issue of pregnant employees in various industries, and they really took that on and prioritized it and brought enforcement actions and issued a guidance and looked into it and held hearings, and it made a huge difference in how employers behave towards pregnant workers. We're hoping that what we've done here is to package for these agencies the fact that there's a huge problem in this industry, and it's a very important industry, and we hope that they'll turn their same attention and resources to this issue, because we know that when civil rights agencies get involved and find out where the problems and bottlenecks are and conduct oversight, that they can really make a huge change in how employers actually treat women.
Thank you very much. Again, I've been speaking with Ariella Migdal with the Women's Rights Project of the National American Civil Liberties Union. Thank you so much for joining me, Ariella.
Thanks so much for having me.
Thanks, Jen. Yes, you're listening to The Film Show on KBOO. I'm SW Conser, and I'm here in the studio with Craig Winslow. He is one of the minds behind Projecting West, and we're also on the phone with Mike Ackerman, who's calling in from San Francisco. And welcome, Craig and Mike.
Hey, thanks so much.
Hey, thanks.
So tell us about this project, Projecting West. This is a multimedia project. Craig, you're a sculptor. What kind of materials do you like to work with? And how is this affecting the project here?
Yeah, I'm a sculptor of light, I guess you would call. So I've been focusing a lot on projection mapping and kind of blending physical 3D things with digital 3D things as well. So projection mapping itself is essentially like if you're going into a theater and what you're seeing is a projection on a flat screen, what projection mapping is mapping a three-dimensional object instead of just a flat wall. So say you take a projector and you aim it at a beach ball, you can then pre-skew the image to wrap perfectly around the beach ball and make it look like the beach ball is like self-illuminating. So it's a very magical sort of feel, and you don't need any, you know, glasses or tech or anything to put on your
face. So it takes a few hours of setup beforehand to get the object that you're projecting on to sit with the projection system?
Yeah, totally. Yeah, and a lot of it is just like you have to be there in the space, which is one of the elements to what kind of inspired Projecting West, is like being in the space and creating on the spot.
And Mike Ackerman, you are an illustrator by trade. How did you get involved in this project with Craig, and what's your part in the big road trip screening series?
All right. Craig and I went to school together, worked on stuff together. So when Craig mentioned that he was going to be doing this project, he offered for me to come along, and I jumped at the opportunity.
What blows my mind about Mike's art, and I want him to talk about it for sure, the fact that each piece that he works on really has this sort of like world behind it. Like, I don't know, even like when we were going to school, he would just tell me all about these stories and narratives and things that are going on behind this still image. So yeah, go ahead. Talk about yourself.
I'm really inspired by like alternate worlds. I grew up in a place that was fairly remote. I mean, our town was very small. And so I took to playing games and enjoyed like exploring these other worlds. I also really love fantasy art and sci-fi and all kinds of weird, fun stuff. So that's where a lot of my inspiration comes from. And I came to the realization that other people had made this thing that I was enjoying and that I was like getting a significant emotional experience from, and decided that I wanted to do that for other people. So that's when I went to Champlain and started studying 3D art, and eventually decided I wanted to do concept art. And I'm excited to create, like, our projections will be a small portal into a parallel world that has its own things going on, and they'll be inspired by our experiences.
So there'll almost be like a gate between realities, and that's where the line of projection is.
Yeah. I like the idea of like turning on the projector and like shining a light into another dimension that's going on parallel to our own. So, yeah, my part of it is going to be a narrative that's going to span the project. It originally came about after doing these sketches every day through the month of May. So a narrative, like, just organically came out of them. And Craig and I have been brainstorming ways that I could collaborate on the project. Because Craig's work is very abstract, and my work is a little bit more literal, although I work in fantasy art a lot. So each day, we'll show up to a location, and Craig will project beautiful abstract things, and I will work on telling a story that kind of reflects our experiences with moving from the East Coast to the West Coast, because we're both from the Northeast.
So are you coming up with a story ahead of time that is going to encompass the road trip, or is this something that's going to unspool along the way in some improvisational form?
Oh, it's going to be completely improvisational. There are like loose ideas that both of us share with our experience moving west, but it's also going to be heavily influenced by the things that we see along the way, because, I mean, neither of us have driven across the U.S. yet. So I'm really excited to see what inspires us along the way, and I'll be incorporating that into the narrative as well.
So neither of you guys has actually been on a road trip across the country. Any trepidation here? I've been on several personally, and they have a tendency sometimes to have a lot of factors that are unexpected and sometimes near disastrous. I've had everything from a blown radiator to collision with a tractor trailer to almost freezing to death at night. So what precautions have you taken to make sure that this road trip is going to go smooth?
Well, we have, like, as far as the technological stuff, we have like backups in place, generators, like the whole idea. We want to be super mobile and can kind of, like, you know, change whatever happens along the way. Like if we, you know, get a tire blown out and we're stuck in another city, then that will just change what we end up projecting that night. Like, you know, if something does happen along the way, it's not necessarily like going to stop the creation of this 15 part series. It's going to, I guess, sort of impact it in a very real way, I imagine.
So about the material that you're going to project, is this a material that you're going to gather along the way as you're on the road trip?
So, and I'll let Mike talk a little bit about this too, but these are all the places that we're going to be projecting are all going to be found locations. So we're taking some extra days in the trip that are in Montana and like the Badlands. And what interests me is a lot of the sort of natural landscapes. So I think a lot of these are going to be, you know, around dusk, we're going to have a few locations in mind beforehand. So we're not pre-planning the whole thing, but we're definitely preparing ourselves for this. And as we find locations along the way, we might find like this nice big rock next to this big gnarled tree. And that inspires like, oh man, I want to make this rock sort of glow and show these sort of like life roots coming, you know, little dots going up the tree. And Mike would also be inspired by something like, you know, they meet a new character or a new friend there, because, and that might be inspired by, you know, we met someone at a gas station earlier in the day, or we had this conversation that came about through some other means, and that impacts the trip and the narrative that develops.
Well, the weather should be generally good in June along most of your route. Is this all going to be outdoor projections?
Yeah, it should be. Like when we were talking about different locations, we'd really love for each spot to sort of pay an homage to wherever we are. So if it is something like Chicago, maybe it's a little more industrial. Or if you're in like the Badlands, I've never been, but I've heard it's just a very unique landscape. So if there's something we can kind of map there that's very Badlands-esque, then the trip itself is going to be this kind of 15-part transition across the United States. And you would see that through each episode.
So this multimedia project is really duplicating a personal journey that both of you are taking, the westward journey. Is this going to have some of the mythology of 19th, 20th century go west young man ethic? Ooh, there?
I'll let Mike answer that.
That's not a bad idea. I hadn't really considered that. But, originally, it's just going to be mostly like our thoughts on moving west. But, you know, like maybe we'll incorporate some of that in there.
We'll get all Lewis and Clark-y on it.
I think you'll be following the Oregon Trail at certain points. Of course, there's a lot of interest these days in the old video game, the Oregon Trail video game.
We'll try not to die of dysentery this time.
Yeah, I was going to say, to not ford rivers.
Yes. Watch for snakes.
So there'll be a way online for viewers to to sort of take that road trip with you?
Yeah, so I have some projectors, but we want to get these really just nice soundscapes and make these really nice pieces. So we're running a Kickstarter right now, and that is sort of our primary way to get backers on board, is we're going to release all of these videos as backer-only videos every day. So the exciting thing yesterday, we were announced, we were awarded Staff Pick by Kickstarter, which is super exciting. And yeah, the Kickstarter is going to end June 1st. And then June 2nd, we're starting it in Portland, Maine, and we're going for 15 days. So it's this very quick turnaround.
So you're going to arrive in Portland, Oregon on, is it the 16th of June?
Yeah, it should be the 16th or the 15th. And then we're doing something special for the 16th, I imagine.
So what can people here in Portland expect to see? Is it going to be something that you create along the way, or do you have some idea of what's going to happen and where it's going to happen?
I don't exactly know yet. I feel like I should have like the big finale sort of planned out and drive people to that space. But we don't want this necessarily, you know, as we're bringing people along, if people are on the way, we're not opposed to having people kind of like come to the location and like hang out as we're doing these things, if they're right along the route and everything. So we'll definitely be, and Mike, correct me if I'm going way beyond this, but, you know, like I think in Portland, being the culmination of this project, if we do keep kind of getting some good momentum here, I'd love to sort of have it be this sort of finale piece that people can be part of and join in on.
Well, let's get a website or two where people can find out more about the project. Yep. Projectingwest.com is the name of your main website.
That's it. Yeah, we added some tour dates on there, which is kind of cool. We kind of feel like a band, I guess, because we're like, oh, we're going 15 days and locations. And some of those say to be announced. Projectingwest.com, it also has a little blurb about each of us, and we're constantly updating that once we sort of plan the rest of the trip and as it comes about. And there's also a link directly to the Kickstarter from projectingwest.com.
Well, very cool. So we've been talking here with Craig Winslow and Michael Ackerman about the project Projecting West. They're going to be taking a road trip from Portland, Maine to Portland, Oregon in June. And more information at projectingwest.com. Craig and Mike, thanks for joining us on the film show.
Thank you so much.
Yeah, thank you so much for having us.
And now back to Jen with the film calendar.
Here's some local film events coming up in the next month. Running from May 28th through June 1st, the Hollywood Theater will be home to the Everything Is Festival Portland, brought to you by Gonzo Found Footage Lovers Everything Is Terrible. Too much going on here to fit into one calendar entry, but events include a Nickelodeon Salute Your Shorts reunion, a B-movie bingo screening of Omega Cop, a hip-hop and comics panel featuring Portland comics writer David Walker, a screening of House Party and live performance by Kid in Play and Mixmaster Mike, and more. Details at hollywoodtheater.org. On Saturday, June 6th, Cinema Project will celebrate the end of its 2015 season with a special screening and fundraising after-party at the VFW Hall in Inner Southeast Portland. The special screening presents works from past visiting artists Danny Leventhal, Jonathan Schwartz, and Saul Levine. The screening will be followed by a celebration and fundraiser featuring local DJs, refreshments, and a silent auction. More info at cinemaproject.org. On Monday, June 8th at 7:30 p.m., Mississippi Records continues its film and lecture series at the Hollywood Theater with an encore screening of Don't Think I've Forgotten, Cambodia's Lost Rock and Roll. The documentary tracks the blossoming and near destruction of Cambodia's rock scene in the 1960s and 70s. More info available at hollywoodtheater.org. Also on Monday, June 8th at 7 p.m., the Clinton Street Theater will host the Portland premiere of 25. The crime drama considers the public's complicated feelings about serial killers in its depiction of a crime rampage by a man bent on killing child molesters. More info at cstpdx.com. From June 14th through 28th, the Northwest Film Center presents the 23rd Annual Portland Jewish Film Festival. The festival showcases over a dozen films by Israeli, U.S., and other international filmmakers to celebrate the diversity of Jewish history, culture, and identity. A full lineup and showtimes can be found at nwfilm.org. From June 17th through the 21st, the Northwest Film Center School of Film offers a unique opportunity with their Claymation Studio with Will Vinton. The long-acclaimed animator and pioneer of Claymation will mentor students to make their own short films in the five-session class. More info at nwfilm.org/school. On Monday, June 22nd at 7 p.m., the Clinton Street Theater will host the latest installment of the POWFest monthly screening series. This month, they'll screen But I'm a Cheerleader, a dark comedy about a young woman who discovers romance in her sexuality and gay conversion therapy, in honor of Pride Month. More info at cstpdx.com. Well, that about wraps it up. Have a great month, folks.
Thank you, Jen. And thanks to our guests today, Oliver Quintanilla, Ariella Migdal from the ACLU's Film Equality Campaign, and Craig Winslow and Michael Ackerman from Projecting West. I'm SW Conser. Thanks, as always, to the Oregon Media Production Association for their support and collaboration. And thanks to all our listeners on the radio dial and on the web. The audio for this show, as well as our extended interviews, will be available later today on our archive page, kboo.fm/thefilmshow. And you can keep up with us on Twitter at @kboofilmshow. Now stay tuned for an afternoon of music on your homegrown Portland radio station.
And you're tuned to Community Radio, KBOO Portland, 90.7 FM, 91.9 FM Hood River, 104.3 FM Philomath.